Well, I'm back. I hope you all had a great summer. We had some lovely hot weather, didn't we? And I hope you had a good one. And it's lovely to be back. And I'm really excited because my first guest is Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of York. And she's here to chat to me about her first novel, Her Heart for a Compass, and lots of other things beside. So come and join us and get your cuppa. Well, I'm so thrilled to have you on, Sarah. This is really, really special. Now, have you got your cup of tea?
Yes, I've got my cup of tea and I'm thrilled. And it's so funny, Twiggy, to think you and I are doing a podcast together, isn't it? I mean, all those years we've been together.
I know.
I mean, you're an icon. You're a legend of this country.
Well, I don't know about that. But
yeah, you are. And I even wanted to know, oh, my goodness, am I still allowed to call you Twiggy?
Yes.
Don't forget that I'm 61. And when...
Well, I'm 71, so I'm 10 years older than you.
You're not, are you really?
I am, yeah.
Wow. Anyway, so you are my sort of iconic person that would understand, because I grew up with you, you know.
You're the age. When you were born, I would have been 10.
Yeah.
Because we're 10 years apart.
Yeah, exactly. But you...
So when I hit the headlines in 1966, you would have been 6. Oh, bless.
little naughty. But you went on and so talking to you is really bringing back, evoking amazing memories of wonderful childhood.
Oh, good. And, I'm glad.
And because mum and dad died very early and it's lovely to think of such happy times. And so you, to me, personified joy and happiness.
Oh, well, that's very nice. You've touched my heart.
It's
that's
truth.
Really nice. That's lovely.
No.
Yeah, because you went, by the time you became a teenager, that whole 60s girly thing would have been very potent to a young teenage girl. Even though I was in my 20s, do you know what I mean?
Yes, well, I looked up to you because mum went to live in Argentina. And so I went through a very lonely period. And, of course, it was people like you that were reaching to young teenage market.
Yeah, that must have been a really tricky time. I did know that, but when I reread it, I thought of, because you were about 12, yes, 13?
I was, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought of I've got a granddaughter of 6, and I, you know, you kind of relate it to little ones you know, so it must have been fair. But you stayed in touch and you went to visit, yeah?
I did, yes, I did, but then we went to war, didn't we? Mum became an Argentine and converted to Catholicism, and so I really didn't see her again really properly.
But she
was. I always adored her. She was a great bon vivant, you know.
I thought that because I remember when we met, we were talking before we came on air, so to speak, about meeting. I think the first time I met you was at Billy Connolly's, lovely Billy and Pamela's. Mm. They were having a summer party. I can't remember how long ago, but it was quite a few years back, probably 20 years, I would think. And
Pammy. In fact, I think Pammy made her thesis when she turned into a psychologist about me.
That's brilliant.
I do remember. I always remember one of her great lines was, she used to say to me, "You're entitled to your feelings. So if you're in an argument, you're able to say, 'Excuse me, I have understood your point, but I'm also entitled to my feelings. Would you listen to mine?'"
Absolutely.
And I remember, I've never forgotten it. She helped me so much, Pammy, and I adore Billy. Yeah. And we've kept in touch, but through birthday cards and birthday messages.
But you know, they live in Miami now. I think, well, somewhere on that coast. I'm not quite sure exactly, but we are loosely in touch. But I just, well, to me, he was one of the most brilliant performers ever. I don't think I've ever laughed so much.
I must admit,
when I went to a Billy Connolly concert.
I must admit, Twiggy, that my next book, which I've already started writing and got a second book deal now.
Good girl.
Yeah, I've based one of the characters around Billy.
Brilliant.
Because I think he's done so well. And do you remember his wonderful banjo playing and how he was so humorous?
Supremely talented. Yeah. I mean, in all his documentaries he did on the bike, which were absolutely brilliant. No, he's brilliant.
I loved him in John Brown as well.
Yeah, he's a wonderful straight actor. I agree. But now, talking of books, one of the reasons we're talking is you're launching your first novel. I know you've written loads. I mean, I can't believe how many children's books you've written. I knew about Budgie. Yeah,
that's right. Budgie. That's right. Yeah,
Budgie the helicopter pilot, and because my granddaughter's got those.
And what's your granddaughter's name? Can I send her a book?
Oh, please. Joni, J-O-N-I, like after Joni Mitchell.
Oh, right. Okay, good.
Because I was a Joni Mitchell fanatic and I called my daughter Carly after Carly Simon, who was my other passion. So when my Carly got pregnant and had Joni, Joni was like top of the list for names after Joni Mitchell.
But did your daughter not have something to do with it, or your son?
Oh, yeah, they picked it. But I think because when Carly was little, I used to play Joni Mitchell ad nauseum. I mean, I knew every lyric to every song. So she grew up as a Joni Mitchell fan.
I love that. I love your daughter and mother relationship. I love that.
Yeah, you're very close to your girls, aren't you? Yeah,
exactly, as close as you are to yours.
I know. So when I meet people who've never had children, they don't quite understand because they're, you've got a very posh cup. Is that part of your collection that you sell?
Sadly, this is not, but because I couldn't find it here. But look at this teapot.
Oh, that's gorgeous. Where's that from?
Well, I know, but this is Miranda Kerr
That's gorgeous.
Not that we shouldn't really be saying that because I want it to be mine, but anyway.
do you actually do cups and saucers as well as tea and biscuits?
Yes, well, we're getting into cups and saucers.
Oh, you should.
At the moment, it's just tea and biscuits, and then and we're getting into, really, that we started with the Duchess collection as tea and biscuits, and then we go into China. Yeah.
Yeah, you must. Yeah. You must.
I hope so.
And this is all to do with your charity Street Child, yeah?
You're absolutely, well done, Twiggy. Goodness, poor
you. I do my research. Yeah. I'm a good girl. I'd read that ages ago, actually.
Well, what happened was during the pandemic, I decided to start Sarah's Trust because I think that when you are with certain charities, you have to keep to what the mission statement is. So you get these people that say, I'm very sorry, but we only do homeless, or we only do this, or we only do that. So I decided, well, I'd never want to not be able to bring a smile to a child. And so I decided to start Sarah's Trust so that if, let's say, Twiggy, you said, well, I want to support children of Sierra Leone, I'd say, great, let's do it. Or if I wanted to support children in the local school down the road, in the Girl Guides, which we just did, I'd be able to do it through Sarah's Trust. So 100% of the money goes to the child, and that was my wish. So,
how wonderful.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, good on you.
Thank you.
The more you can add to it, the better, because it's such a, you know, there's a lot, especially since we've gone through this unbelievable horribleness is the only word I can think of, the last year and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many kids in trouble and really suffering. It's hard enough for children in, you know, happy homes and you know, being looked after, but kids who are from poor backgrounds or countries that haven't, you know, got the means to look after them, it must be unbelievable.
Well, I think the most important thing is that children need hope, and that's why I do story time with Fergie and friends. So your Joni needs to go on YouTube. And
yeah, I didn't know about that, actually. Well, if you ever want another reader, I'd love to do
it. Good, would you? I'd love that.
Oh, I'd love it, because I read to Joni. Well, actually, now, because she's six, she's just turned six, and it's a very proud moment, because she last week she read me her book for the first time, rather than me reading her.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Now,
do you only have one? Only have one grandchild?
I've got one little girl, and her brother is a year and 6 months.
What's his name?
Theo. And he is divine. And then my stepson, Lee's, do you remember Lee, my husband?
Yeah.
His son, my stepson, has got three. So we got a handful.
Wow.
And you've just got your first, yeah?
Yeah, I've got August.
Yep. Is he gorgeous?
Yeah, he is. He is. Oh. But I'm very, very proud of the way Eugenie is as a mother. I think that's what I really like to look at. I love to look at Eugenie and say, you know, I'm so proud of you, Eugenie.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Isn't it an amazing feeling when your little girl suddenly has a baby? It's like, and somebody said to me once, wait till you have before I had grandchildren, they said, wait till you have a grandchild, because when you fall in love, you think that is love, the greatest love. Then you have a child, and that really is the deepest, greatest love. But when you have a grandchild, it kind of is triple fold. And it really is. I mean, I am so obsessed with Joni. Everything she does is amazing to me. Maybe it's because I'm not with her 24 hours, so I can enjoy the times I have with her. I don't know. You'll be experiencing it now with August.
I couldn't agree more. But I love seeing Eugenie. It is a very different feeling, though, isn't it? From when they get married to then they have their babies, as you rightly said. Yeah. But you really do have to learn a different way of dealing with them
as well. Yes, of course.
You?
Yeah, because, you know, but also what will happen, you'll see, they, as the kids grow a bit, you know, often Carly says to me, oh, Mum, I can see now why you did this or said that.
I got a lot of that.
And sometimes she reprimands me and said, you know, you shouldn't have done that, Mum.
Yeah, well, we get a lot of that.
That wasn't a good choice.
We get a lot of that.
But we're really, I mean, she's my best friend, Carly.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're two of yours.
Completely. Best friends.
Yeah,
completely.
It's exactly the same.
I wonder if it's with our age. Do you think it is, Twiggy, that we were brought up in this age group about how to bring up children? Or
maybe.
Are we just brilliant mothers?
Oh, we're brilliant. We're brilliant mother. We're brilliant people.
Yeah, we're brilliant people. Yeah, actually, come on, let's agree. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Did your mother have a beautiful complexion as well?
My mum, she did actually. She had really... My mum lived till she was 91, bless her.
And does she look like you? Because you really
no,
have...
I look like my dad.
Really?
Yeah, I look like my dad.
I mean, weren't you the Kate Moss of the 60s?
Probably, yeah. Kate and I always laugh because I was, you know, if I'd have gone to a model agency in 66, they would have shown me the door because I was 5'6". I was under the measurements you have to be. I was so skinny, although, you know, I ate like a horse, but I was just skinny. So I wouldn't have been taken on. And Kate is 5'6", 6.5", and tiny. It's so funny that
I love Kate.
Oh, she's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I love that new advert she's just done with the Kardashians.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh, you've got to see that.
Oh, is it wonderful?
Yeah, it's wonderful. Wonderful photograph.
Oh, I'll have a look. Anyway, let's get on to your book. Now, I've started it. Unfortunately, I only got it on, it arrived at my house in London on Friday. Yeah, I've got it. There it is. Her heart for a compass.
Yes, but Twiggy, don't worry because I shall...
I've read the first two chapters and I'm hooked.
I know. I love the smell of a new book.
I do. That's what my stepson Ace always does that. When he opens a book, he smells it. He's always done that.
I do.
It's so funny.
I do.
But I was so your publishers very kindly sent me the intro into the book and how. So it's based on a long lost relative of yours.
Yes, I decided that I wanted to know what my DNA was and why I certainly had these extraordinary belief system about integrity and honor and kindness and goodness. And I thought that it has to come from my own ancestry. And so the BBC came to me and said, do you want to do Who Do You Think You Are? You know,
and I did it. It's brilliant.
Yeah. And I said to Kate, oh, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. But actually, as soon as I started thinking, well, this is quite fun, And then I thought, well, hold on a minute. I've always wanted to write this novel about this fiery redhead set in 1870, because I'm passionate about that period, Victorian period. So why don't I, in my research, write the book? And so then I found that my middle name's Margaret. So I decided I'd look for a Margaret. And I found a redheaded Lady Margaret Cameron. And in finding her, she was my grandmother's, you know, niece or something. And great niece or something. And in doing that, I then thought, this is going to be a sizzling romance. And I had her, when it first started, I think I had her, you know, riding a stride instead of side saddle, because that was so not done in those
days. Absolutely.
And so then I really got into it, and it was my escape route. So when I went to Mills and Boone, I loved their philosophy about escapism during World War II and things like that. And I thought to myself, well, this is what I've done with my own book. I've escaped into the pages of my own book. And it really makes me laugh, Twiggy, because people say, how are you going to change it that she's wearing that? Or how are you going to change it she's doing that? I said, my book, I can do what I want.
That's true.
And then I started to really love Lady Margaret to such a degree that I actually sort of morphed into her. And so during the pandemic, when I decided to really get into it, every single day I would go through my own emotions and how I felt about lockdown, how I felt about how it made me want to crusade to the front line, to start my brew for a crew, to start all the things I do, to deliver all the packages, to oh my goodness, Lady Margaret would have done that. She would have, you know, gone into Hammersmith Hospital, and Ramsay, who's a great surgeon there, said, send me 600 hand creams by 4 o'clock tomorrow, the poor nurses. And so I'd ring all these people and say, get me the hand cream. The Bayliss and Harding, for example, my Brilliant. Friend Tanya. I said, Tanya, I need... So she used to send pallets of hand creams and lovely things to the nurses. And I think Lady Margaret was like that. She, in her heart for a compass, it's about a very strong redhead who never gives up, following the belief of her
own. Sounds like somebody I know. So it's based on her, but this is not her actual life story. You've turned it into a
novel,
correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So are there other real life people in it, or is it all your imagination?
No, there's all the houses, all the history.
Okay.
It's really very true to history. I've just fictionalized the characters.
Oh, it must have been so much fun to research, wasn't it?
Oh, my heavens.
Or was it a nightmare?
No, Twiggy, it's lovely. But what's so funny is that I sort of, because, of course, it's all started with me studying my own DNA as to why I'm still standing. Yeah. When, you know, Rudyard Kipling, when he writes, if you can keep your head when all men doubt you and blame it on you. Yeah. And I think, you know, Twiggy, and you've been through your own grief, but I'm still here with sense of humour, happy, with long red hair, which is all in a bun at the moment.
Beautiful red hair, I have to say.
Thank you, Twiggy. But I'm still here. Now, why am I still here? And I'm still going through mental issues. I still go through self-doubt and self-sabotage and all those things. But yet I've got a friend in Lady Margaret now, and my book is about that.
So when you, I mean, I started this podcast as when the pandemic began, and it's really helped me through the last year and a half, because we were isolating. I mean, I've got, obviously Lee and I are together, so we had each other, but I couldn't see Carly. I couldn't see the kids, which was the hardest thing for me. I mean, it was like torturous. Because I would often, if I wasn't working, I'd be with Carly 2-3 times a week.
Of course.
And my grandchildren, and helping. Because she only had her baby 3 weeks before the pandemic started. So I got to meet Theo, but that was it.
And poor Carly had no help then without Granny.
No. Well, her husband, luckily he was at home. But, you know, I would have been there much, much more. So for me, doing the podcast, it was something, you know, to concentrate on, do my research and talk to, it started off, you know, ringing my friends and saying, will you do it with me? It'd be fun. And that's how it kind of grew. And I've really, really enjoyed it. And I'm sure writing the book through the pandemic must have helped you, because you could immerse yourself into
I'm really proud of you doing this, Twiggy. Well done doing this, because you've got a lot of...
I was ever so scared.
But you've got a lot of, followers. And how lovely to think that because of Lady Margaret, we're having a cup of tea today. I mean, don't you love that?
I know. I do. It is. And it's actually, I started off with people I often see a lot. I mean, Joanna Lumley was my first. I rang her up and said, I'm going to do a podcast. I'm really scared. Will you do it with me? Because, I'd never done one before. And I had lovely Kobe, my producer, doing all the technicals. And once I start...
How did you find Kobe?
My agent, because my agent rang and said there've been people asking if you want to do a podcast, and he put me together with Kobe. And it's funny because Kobe and I have only met online.
How extraordinary. Well, we love Kobe. Well, we need a Kobe.
And he's had a baby in the time. So I know his little Milo has come along. And I mean, it's so weird.
It's just really nice to be able to meet a kindred spirit who's today, and to be with Kobe and to have a very gentle discussion, because you know full well, don't you, Twiggy, that I am deeply very gentle. I have to
very strong, and that's why when I decided to do the podcast, I didn't want, because I know, you know, I'm usually at the other end of being interviewed or chatting, yeah. And I know that I didn't want to put my friends and people I admire through anything that I wouldn't want to go through. Mm. And what's happened, because you're just chatting with people, and I get such lovely feedback, because you hear things from people that you've never heard before, because you're just chatting.
Yeah.
They're promoting things sometimes. Sometimes they're not. It's just talking about life in general and happy things and sad things and just how everyone, at the beginning, we were all talking about how we're getting through the, you know, this awful lockdown and helping each other, really. It's been wonderful for me, I have to say. And I've got to talk to, and some people I've never met. You know, I was a huge fan of Rufus Wainwright. I don't know whether you know him. He's a musician in America. He's brilliant. And I knew he had a new album coming out. So we wrote to him to see if he'd do it. And he said, yes.
Oh, my goodness. I think.
And it was so exciting.
I think we should have our own radio show together, Twiggy.
Oh, that'd be brilliant.
Fergie and Twiggy.
That'd be hysterical.
Or maybe it's Twiggy Fergie for the first time. For the first time, they won't say fat, frumpy Fergie, which they have always done before.
Yeah, but, you know, that's a whole other area of people that we.
Yeah, I know.
You know. I know. I mean, I got it in the neck too a lot. You know, I got blamed for making girls anorexic, and which I that was not what I was about. I just happened to be skinny. I mean, I know. So I do know, and that hurt on the other end of it. You know, it was like I was being blamed for something that didn't exist. And I was really shy and really insecure. And so when you're that tender, you know, I was so young, as you were, you know, and it's just cruel. So I knew when I did my podcast, that's not the way I wanted to go. It wasn't about shocking people or taunting people. It was about having a nice, friendly chat over a cup of tea.
A cuppa.
A good old cuppa. You were great friends, I know. And again, if you don't want to talk about it, but when I was reading your bio and saying how close you were to lovely Princess Diana, who again I got to meet twice, and she was so gorgeous and so lovely. And I know you were really, really close friends, and you talk about her with such love. And I love, you said somewhere I read that you just think, you know, think she's still around and that she's with you, which is lovely.
Yeah, I mean, I think the humour and the laughter and the love of friends is exactly what we've always had. And if Diana would be here now, she would be so proud of her grandchildren and their sons and their wives. I adored every bit of her. And she was my best friend and just adored her. And I just loved the way she loved me. She always used to say, "Wear turquoise more, Fergie, wear turquoise." And she was just a very special lady that also didn't realize how everybody loved her. She didn't know.
Yeah, and how magical she was. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I know when I met her, she was so kind of sweet and almost shy in a way. And we got to chat and she was talking about her boys and I was talking about my kids. Yeah. I think she was shy.
Yeah. I think she was.
Yeah. I think actually most people, well, not most people, but I was always incredibly shy. And yet what happened to me happened. I mean, and I certainly was probably more shocked than anyone else. But you learn to deal with it and you learn to get through it, as you know, and as you have. I mean, God, you were thrust into public life and the press and but you do learn to deal with it, don't you?
I think you have to understand the platform that I was put on was such an extraordinary lucky place for me. 23rd of July 1986 was the most blessed day of my life. I married a wonderful, fabulous prince and a man and a sailor, mm-hmm. and a very good looking one too, which helps enormously. And
certainly.
and then you're on the public stage, and for me, and that's why I wanted to do this book and look at the DNA, because I really felt very strongly that it was like I was meant to be there, that I was meant to carry on, and that I love my role as a public figure, and I really enjoyed doing it and going to meet these extraordinary people, and I was so excited and not complacent at all with such a huge honor. And so I really see it that it wasn't just a case of being famous. It was a case of, this is my honor to do what I'm going to do.
But you are, like I was, thrust onto the world stage almost overnight, aren't you?
Yes, you are. And you're absolutely right, Twiggy.
How old were you?
24.
I was 16.
Yeah.
And so suddenly from, you know, being known in your circle, like I was known, my friends and my family, to suddenly being known worldwide.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird, isn't it? Don't you think?
Yeah, very.
When you think about it.
Very weird.
You know, when we go, often when we used to go on holiday, Lee used to say, "Oh, for God's sake, where can we go in the world where nobody recognises you?"
When did you marry Lee?
We got married in 1988. So we've been together 36 years. Looks like an adult, 36 years.
Wow. It's incredible. I remember.
No, we've been together. Actually, we've been together 36 years. We've been married 33.
I remember Lee very well.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
I got lucky. I mean, I had about, you know, my first marriage was not a happy. Well, it began happy, and I had my gorgeous girl, so I don't regret it.
Going back to that point about the public stage, it is. I was thrust in it earlier when Diana went to start it. So it must have been about, Diana was 17. So it was 18. I was 18 because that I was out there not just as the friend. But then I got, I was 24, 25 when it, with Prince Andrew. And from that day forward to now, I always believe that you started this podcast during the pandemic. I've written a book. I think it's just in our blood that if you're thrust into the public stage, it's very much your sense of duty, your civic duty to what you believe is right. And I think you've obviously brought Carly up like that. And I think that's why I love it. I love what I do. But I do think my father was right when he said, make sure the kitchen is more important than the dining room table. Make sure the man who's driven you to the party, make sure you know his name, and make sure you thank him for a lovely drive. Make sure you know the name of the man who opens the door for you at the hotel. And I believe very, very firmly that in my DNA is that belief system that we're all the same, really. And what we must do is bring a smile.
But don't you also think what you put out, you get back? I mean, I think if you're kind to people most of the time, you do get kind. I like to believe that anyway.
Twiggy, I can tell you, I started ambassadorship for the Kindness Foundation during the pandemic, and they have a thing called KQ, which you have EQ, IQ, and KQ. And what we want to do is bring KQ into primary education and into schools, that no, every child has to take the KQ test, to bring kindness as the number one word in schools from a very early age. Exactly. And I think your question was, do you believe by being kind, you get kindness back? It's my mantra, the wonderful poem by Mother Teresa, where she says, if people are unkind, be kind anyway. You know, always that sense of turning it around to joy and turning it around to...
That's harder to do, because if somebody's not nice to me, there's a streak in me that I can equally not be very nice back, but I would never instigate it, if you know what I mean.
Oh, no.
But then I think that's being strong and protecting yourself.
Oh, no, that's quite right. Oh, no.
And you're very strong. I can, you know, I can tell you're very strong.
We're not pushovers, Twiggy.
Who knew?
Back not in me. Your box. And of course, also because we can see people coming a mile away, can't we?
Oh, absolutely. Can sniff them out. The other thing I didn't realise that you did, which is brilliant, you were one of the producers on Young Victoria, the film. Was that your idea?
It was, Twiggy. Thank you so much.
I love that film.
When Andrew went to sea in 1986, I saw him 40 days a year for the first 5 years of our marriage.
Oh, my God, that's terrible.
It's terrible. It's terrible. So I decided that with this wonderful man who's called Michael Timms, and he used to stay late, and we were at the Palace, as a nice throwaway line, at the Palace, and I was on the second floor, very, very sort of missing Andrew dreadfully, and he said, come on, let's go round the Palace. So he used to take me on guided tours at late at night, not that late, I mean 7 o'clock when everyone had gone home.
Yeah.
And we went round the Palace and we found all these beautiful little doors and paintings and all this fantastic wealth of such history. So I decided to write 2 history books about Queen Victoria and Albert. And I realised the love story was so immense that I then took it to Hollywood, and that took me 15 years to make into a movie. But that was my idea, and I produced it with Martin Scorsese and Graham King, and Julian Fellowes wrote the script. And
it was such a gorgeous. Can people still get it if they want to watch it? What's it on? One of the
Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Actually, I'm going to watch it again because I loved it. Emily Blunt, right, played Queen Victoria. Didn't it win lots of awards?
Yeah, it won an Oscar for Best Costume and up for Golden Globes. And I tell you why I was so interesting, Twiggy, because nobody really knows except you and people like you that I did it. And so when the double-decker bus went by with Emily Blunt as Victoria on the bus, I stood on the pavement. And for any American who's listening, it's called the sidewalk. And I stood there, and as the bus went by, I did a high five, and I went, yes, yes, but yes. Nobody saw. So that's why it's really more about getting it out of my head, because I thought it was so important to tell the romance. And that's why Her Heart for a Compass, I hope that after this podcast, Twiggy, that it can be made into a next Bridgerton.
I'm only in chapter 2, as I say, because I only got it on late Friday, but this when I started reading it and when she leaves the party, you know, at the beginning, I'm dying to know where she goes, but I'm thinking, oh my God, this has got to be a mini series or a movie.
Well, but you know what, I love that you said that, because you've exactly got the point. When I was there, I thought, no, I need this book to be Pride and Prejudice meets 24, you remember, with Kiefer Sutherland in 24. And so it has to be a complete...
The thriller.
Yeah, so thriller, so when element. You actually got it, when she runs out of the party and then trips over, and then what happens?
And goes through the gate. Like, I think, oh my God, well, I'll get onto that tonight. But they won't be able to hold me down. I'm a very slow reader, so because I like to take it in. But I read all the time. It's
good
one
for
of
you.
My passions. So I'm really looking... This will last me a couple of months. I usually I read at night before I go to sleep, and I usually read 2 or 3 chapters a night.
Wow. I'm sorry, I've given you such a big book to read.
No, actually, I love it. When it's big books, I love it.
But Twiggy, what is fun for you is each line you read, you'll go, I know that girl. I know that because you'll hear my voice.
But that's what must be lovely. I'm not a writer. I can scribble bits, but other authors I've spoken to say there's always a little bit of them in there somewhere, which I don't think you can stop that happening, probably, because it's you, isn't it? The other thing I want to ask you, because I ask everyone, did you have a special person in your earlier life, either at school or later, like a mentor, a teacher? Or
I actually really agree with you, because I went through so much pain when I was losing mum. I lost my way and I became deeply, deeply insecure. I kept asking everybody for advice and I never trusted my own judgment of myself. And I suppose it wasn't until I've got my lovely ex-husband, but lovely Andrew, that he always believes in me and always did believe in me. But the real person is of course, and I know this sounds so weird, Twiggy, to say it, but my greatest mentor and belief person who believes in me is the Queen and has never faltered. And I absolutely, I admire the incredible way that Her Majesty is so modern. I know, 95 and so modern, and how flexible and how understanding and how forgiving and how generous.
No, I've met her a couple of times and she's always charming and gracious and she's
humble.
Extraordinary woman.
And I think to myself that honestly, my mother-in-law has been more of a mother to me than my mother. And so that is the greatest. I absolutely think there is no greater mentor, because to the day that when I'm from a little girl to now, the consistency of Her Majesty has been a great honour. So it's a huge honour. Makes me want to cry.
So lovely. Because that's such a, you know, we as the public only see her public side. So to hear that from somebody who's within her private life is lovely.
I'm very blessed. Very, very blessed. I'm very blessed. Yeah. I mean, every single day I say that, by the way. I wake up and say that every day.
Do your girls live quite near you?
They live in London.
You don't have to say where they live.
No, they live in London. I've always, because I was brought up on a farm, I love to hear the birds sing. And so during the pandemic, of course, you heard them sing even louder. And then I love at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock with the wood pigeon says goodnight. And he makes that little noise of a wood pigeon going. And yesterday was very sweet because Eugenie sent me a voice note of the wood pigeon where she was saying goodnight. And I thought, how kind and sweet is that?
Oh, how sweet.
So lovely.
So lovely. Well, listen, you've been so lovely to come on and chat to me. I'm thrilled to kind of get back to saying hello to you, you know.
Let's do that.
Let's do it.
As you were talking, Twiggy, I've made a note to get in touch and get you and Lee over here.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
And have a cup of tea in real life. And then you could bring Joni.
Oh, that'd be fun.
And we'd wander around the garden and see the little house and see all the puppies. I've got puppies.
Oh.
Yes.
Then you're on. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. And good luck with the book.
Thank you.
I can, having only just got into it, but I can recommend it. You will be hooked within chapter two. I'm away. I can't wait for the journey I'm going on. Listen, if people want to get the tea, because it's delicious, I hear, and the biscuits, and it's for a really good charity. So where can people get hold of it?
You're so kind. Well, that's so kind of you. Yeah, but because we did Brew for a Crew and Duchess Collection Tea because, you know, it's so British to have a cup of tea and a biscuit, isn't it?
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And so I thought, well, if we could do a cup of tea and a biscuit and people are making a brew for the crew, they can feel that they're doing something to help this country and all the frontline workers. So you can get it on duchesscollection.com.
Perfect.
I think you can, can't you? What is it? Yes. And also through sarahstrust.org. And it's very, very exciting. And I'm just thrilled to be able to share it. And I have heard the caramel biscuits are so good.
Ooh, caramel biscuits. So right up my alley. Anyway, well, we'll get together soon.
We will.
And thank you again for joining me. It's been a joy.
No,
and good luck with the book.
I'm very much lost for words at how great you look. It's
cute. Oh, thank you.
But Twiggy, you've inspired me because I now think that if I can look like you at 71, I'll be just like rocking.
Oh, well, that's very sweet. I'm quite proud of my wrinkles. They're there for a reason.
There aren't any wrinkles.
there are. I'm sitting by a very big window.
No, you look fantastic.
God's lighting. Anyway, have a lovely rest of the day and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Ah, what a lovely lady. And don't forget, her book's out now, so go and grab one, Her Heart for a Compass. And I hope you enjoyed the chat too. I did. See you next time. Bye.
If this is your first time listening to Tea with Twiggy, please do remember to tell your friends. You can also subscribe for free on your podcast app and listen to all my previous guests. If you want to connect with me, I'd love to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter at Twiggy, or you can find me on Instagram at Twiggy Lawson. My thanks go to all the people that have helped this podcast happen. Many thanks to James Carroll and all the team at North Bank Talent Management. Thanks to all the team at Stripped Media, including Ben Williams, who edits the show, my producer Kobe Omanaka, and executive producers Tom Wally and Dave Corkery. The music you can hear now is my version of Waterloo Sunset by The Kinks. If you'd like to hear the whole song, you can find it and all the other songs I've recorded on iTunes and Spotify. So check it out. I look forward to you joining me for my next episode. So see you then. Bye.
Just heard a Stripped Media production.